Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Game of Thrones television series on HBO. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Hey, welcome everybody.
Welcome to a mini Geeks On.
This is a mini Geeks On. Be a
itty bitty.
One thing we wanted to do is get out an episode about the Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Sooner than later.
Yes. Are we also going to put out an RSS feed of our interview with George R. R. Martin?
I will try to dig out the old interview and repost that as a separate
episode.
Separate episode.
I think that's a good idea. Excellent.
But we have some guests here. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to introduce everybody. Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Matt King. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Pete Robinson. I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
My name is Paris Tanaka, and I am an actress here in Los Angeles.
She won't Own say it. She's a geek.
I refuse to say I'm a geek.
Why? You're about to have a conversation about Game of Thrones. I think
it's very geek-like. I know.
Okay, but yeah, so this is just a geek trend for you. Not
you're just dabbling.
You're just dipping a toe.
I'm dabbling.
Okay,
and we have one more guest.
And my name is Ianthe, and I'm a creative director, and I'm geek adjacent.
You're geek adjacent.
Hey, how are you, Ianthe?
Does that mean like you've been around while people have been playing World of Warcraft?
No. Mm-hmm. Ianthe, how many times have you read The Silmarillion?
You're going to bust me on that publicly, huh?
Yeah.
You're getting called out. If you know what it is, you're a geek, let alone have read
right.
it.
I have to say I don't know what that is.
Okay, you are a geek, kid, Jason. Yeah.
Okay, so let's start. What we're going to do for people who are listening to this is the first part of this Game of Thrones talk is going to be semi-spoiler-free, meaning that you have had to have seen the first two episodes in order to not be spoiled with the first part of this conversation.
Okay, so if you have not, or if you have not seen the first two episodes of the Game of Thrones TV show and you don't want us to ruin them for you,
then you probably should not be listening to this at all.
Stop listening.
Yes.
Stop listening.
Right.
All right.
Good
morning. Stop listening.
The second part of this discussion, we will let you know, but the kids are going to have to go into the next room because we're going to talk about the Game of Thrones TV show, but we're going to be talking about it in context of all the books. And so there's going to be plenty of spoilers.
Right. Now, the books, we're going to ruin it. We're going to kill it.
Exactly.
So even if you've seen the first two episodes of the show and you're like dying to know what will happen at the end of the series, we're going to kill it all.
Right.
So go away.
Yeah. So we'll warn you when that happens. So
yes.
All right. So now we have the instructions now. So let's talk about Game of Thrones.
All right.
Well, first of all,
like or hate, right?
First of all, what did we all think so far?
I think they did a really great job. They took a really complicated series of books, and they introduced a ton of characters, and they weren't boring about it.
Have you read the books, Ianthe?
I've read all of them. Yeah,
you have. Oh my god, you're a geek. Shut up.
No. Okay, I'm like uncle.
You read Game of Thrones twice, right?
Yeah, I did.
Oh my god,
that's what I thought.
Okay, yep. So I totally agree. I feel like when I heard they were making this book series, the first thing I thought of was there's no way they're going to be able to get all these characters in here. I mean, there's more characters in, like, Tolkien novels by a long shot.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought they did a good job of easing us in. We all know there are more people to come.
Yeah.
But they chose the right people to introduce.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're introducing it directly as it is in the novel, though. I mean, it's not like this is
kind of. They've leaned down on the number of Stark children. They have not
no Theon Greyjoy.
No,
I mean,
Theon Greyjoy
in,
has not.
He's in the shots,
but he's not mentioned.
He's there, but he's not introduced.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's no reason. I mean, there's no reason to at this point. I'm sure they're going to be able to introduce him when he needs to be.
Yeah, like number five or six, they'll get to him.
Right. But I think they've done it appropriately. And for God's sake, the footage looks beautiful. So
footage looks beautiful.
The art direction is fantastic as well. Yes. I mean, the set's fantastic.
I have one problem with it, which is I don't really like the design for the horse lords.
Yeah,
I think they're
agree with
a
that.
Little bit cheesy.
I agree.
Okay.
I would actually say that it's not cheesy, but they made an incorrect casting choice. Is that for whatever reason they've decided that the Dothraki are going to be multiracial? So. In my mind, at least, after reading the books, I was thinking the Dothraki are a people, meaning that they're a race. And in this, the only thing that unified the Dothraki are that they're dirty.
And they modern dance.
And they modern dance.
They modern dance a lot. Yeah.
There was a little modern dance going on.
And they hump a lot. and I feel like that's they're saying, you know, look, they're Dothraki. Whereas they wouldn't have had to do that if they just went out and got a bunch of Samoans or matched whoever the lead actor was that they got for Drogo, who I think actually looks wonderfully foreign and actually a lot like what I thought Drogo looked like.
Really? Okay, because I'm going to say that whole scenario is the most problematic of all of them for me.
The storyline or what?
No, just the casting and the art direction, because yeah. I actually have a pretty hard time with the actor that they cast as Drogo, and maybe it's me, but I look at him and I see Dave Navarro every time I look at him, and it just throws me right out of it.
I agree. I don't think
with the eyeliner.
Exotic. I didn't do it. I did not think of Dave Navarro until you just said that, and now
sorry.
It's going to be
Dave Navarro on, like, super steroids.
Yes. Yes,
the eyeshadow is not helping a whole lot either.
Yeah, no.
But they do say that they kohl their eyelids. He does say that in the book, that they put kohl on their eyelids and stuff.
Right. Yeah, but it's not.
That's what it would look like.
I understand.
They also say Daenerys has violet eyes, but if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know?
Well, how many actors? I think there's a difference between wearing makeup and finding a person with violet eyes.
No. They tried to put contacts on them, and I saw an interview. They tried to make them look good with violet eyes.
Terrible.
And they said they just over and over and over. They said everyone apparently just people look so weird. You would have a hard time just getting to connect with them because they look so odd. So they just decide to scrap that aspect of the description, which is fine.
I was actually sort of worried about that woman as Daenerys, and when I saw the pictures, I was like, nah. But how do you know she's the most beautiful woman in the entire world?
Well, okay, I like to address this.
I think she's actually really interesting. I like
exactly.
her a lot.
Exactly.
As far as Cersei Lannister, the queen, I always imagined her even more beautiful.
Right.
And I think they have kind of a problem with the series. The beauty level is not cranked very high.
Oh, really? No, I think she just hasn't cranked the sex there, because I think Lena Headey can pull it off. She got me going in 300. So I mean,
I think I didn't
actually even recognize her from the 300. To be honest with you, now that you've said that, it's kind of have. But I would agree with Aaron. I mean, I just think in the books, again, her beauty is such a tool for her that having not stand out, and I don't think she stands out enough, is problematic for me.
Right. But again, I mean, how are you going to find the actress who can pull off the lines, which I think are far more important than... being, you know, they could have gotten Megan Fox and put her in a blonde wig.
No, I'm not saying this is an awful choice or anything.
Agreed. I'm with Aaron. I think she's actually, her performance is really good so far. I mean, I just physically was a little, I don't know. I guess I had an expectation that wasn't quite met. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
What do we think about how Ned Stark is doing? Sean Bean.
Oh, he's always fantastic.
He's of course older by far than Ned Stark would have actually been if you followed books, but I think he's fantastic. I think he's utterly fantastic.
They have aged everybody.
They aged everybody.
Yes.
Like the kids are at least 2 years older.
Yeah. And at least at minimum.
Now, I have two problems with the kids. I think that Rob and John look way too similar.
Well, they read similar to me for a while in the books. I swear to God, I could not keep them apart in the book.
I actually really love the pick of the actor they have for Jon Snow. He's one of my favorite characters in the book, and I really love what I've seen so far. And I mean, Rob, we haven't seen a lot of yet. I mean, we've seen bits and pieces, but...
Yeah. Still, the best choice that they made, Peter Dinklage, he's just... Awesome. He's unbelievably awesome. He's my favorite. He was my favorite character in the book, and I think he's doing an amazing job with him. With
I think. I think you just. I think you just like him because he looks like you as a midget.
Nice.
Wow.
Wow. That's
the gloves are off.
Wow.
He's a very handsome little guy.
Yeah, no, he is.
He's a very handsome.
Actually,
guy.
That's my when. Trust me, when I that he was the first person I wanted them to go call when I heard that they were doing this, and yet he when I read the books, I think of him as a twisted, very ugly dwarf, and he is not that at all. Yeah.
You know what I think of his face as? I think of his face as being, what was the character from The Goonies with the weird-ass head?
Oh, that guy with the kind of cone head and the teeth.
Not that bad, but close.
I've been thinking about one of the you know, some of the guys in the Time Bandits had some pretty...
Wow.
Come on. They had every actor in Hollywood that was under, 4 feet was in that movie.
That's true.
So they, that's a good list.
See, it's funny because again, from the books, I didn't really envision Tyrion Lannister being that ugly per se. I didn't think he had to be because he was being measured against Jaime Lannister and Cersei, which are two of the most beautiful people in this world. You know what I mean? And that kind of measure of perfection,
right,
wouldn't have to be horrendously ugly to not measure up to that. You know?
Okay.
Now, what do you think about Jaime Lannister?
Yeah, that's.
Oh yeah.
Not a big fan of Jaime Lannister, the actor, yet.
Yet.
He's even the character design of him, he feels like he's somebody from the modern world. Like he's kind of got a Dirk Benedict like A-team face man thing going on.
It's the hair, I think.
I think it's the hair, too. I don't think the haircut's helping him too much.
No, Aaron, no.
I imagine Jaime Lannister having these long golden locks, and he doesn't have that.
First we screw up the
Now I'm Drogo like, for you. Dave Navarro.
Yeah, that was messed up with the Drogo thing. You've messed him up for all of us.
Really messed up, man. Dave Navarro. And you're like, go play bass, man. Go put on some rings.
We've done some complaining here, but we've seen two episodes. The next episode's coming out very soon, this coming up Sunday. The castles, the costumes. The costumes are just out of this world.
They're amazing.
They have spent some serious money on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, now there were basically four main storylines that they needed to get out in Game of Thrones that were absolutely necessary. And now the spoilers on the TV show begin.
Are we starting now?
Well, not on the books.
Oh, okay.
Not on the books. This is just first two episodes, right? First two.
Okay.
Yep.
One is that Jon Arryn, the former Hand of the King, is dead.
Right.
Two is the sort of little bit of head-to-head that's happening with House Stark and House Lannister.
Right.
Three, that the queen is across the street. See, that Daenerys is across the street. See.
Right.
And four, that there's stuff going on at the wall.
Right.
That is nasty and spooky. And, it was funny because I had this conversation with a bunch of friends of mine who are huge fans of the book. And they were bitching. They were bitching that Stark kids got removed and all of these other things. And my point was that those are the four things that needed to get done more than anything in that first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that they managed actually to get character across while still doing those four things in an hour, which I thought was astounding.
Right. And we have time to get the other characters introduced when needed.
Right.
And develop.
Yeah, and I think they did an amazing job of not only getting those four storylines out, but they laid the basis for introducing more characters later on. I mean, all those characters are there, and they've given some moments. They may not have given them lines, but they've given them they've given them face time with the audience, and I think when the moment comes to introduce them, there's going to be some background there already, you know? Right.
Yeah, and how many times, like in The Sopranos, where they would introduce a character in an episode, and they would talk to him as if they'd been there for three, you know, seasons, and it was the first time you'd ever seen them.
Right.
It happened all the damn time on Sopranos, and it really threw me for a loop. And then here, if you watch, like I watched the pilot a second time, you can go back and you say, oh my God, there's, Theon Greyjoy. He's standing mm-hmm. right there. They don't mention him. And there is the Hound walks in, right. rides in.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the second episode, they say, here's the Hound. And he's,
yeah.
So they're there ready to go.
Oh yeah.
They're layering them and slowly drawing them out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, I thought they did a wonderful sidestep of what could have been typical sword and sorcery fare of sort of spending too much time in the details. Rather than saying, we've caught a guy, one of the men from the wall, right? That was the first line that their Meister comes in and tells them.
Uh-huh.
Right? And they could have spent a great deal of time going, these are the Meisters, and this is what they do, and what does your cane mean? And everything that is in the books in detail, and they really, really just went, no, let's just get the lines out and go. You know,
right.
Really, everything's about plot.
And they're letting things like the set and the characters tell some of that story and costume design without having to say it, which I think is, a testament to the confidence in the people they hired for sets and costumes,
yep.
but also just it's kind of a sign of good writing that you can cover things without having to say it.
I think,
actually, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think you hit it the nail on the head, Aaron. I mean, I think it's just really confident that they know also that the audience is paying enough attention and can pick up on detail and be able to figure out some of the details without someone actually speaking them, because there's nothing more boring than people talking at you, to tell you information. So I think they did a great job with it.
Actually, in the second episode, they did something which I thought was wonderful, is they have this this moment with Tyrion and
Jon.
No, that's good too. But Tyrion and his nephew, can't think of the snotty king.
Oh yeah,
Jeffrey.
Yeah, Tyrion and Jeffrey, and you really see immediately he does not like this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back and they do something which is actually not really mentioned in the books. He has breakfast and he just looks at his other niece and nephew, Myrcella and her brother, and he has a ball with them and he's just making faces at them, which George R. R. Martin never really does. He never sets up their relationship or that he loves Myrcella or anything like that. But Dinklage did it in that scene. And I thought that was a wonderful way of expanding, actually, for the first time, the canon of Game of Thrones. I was like, oh, Tyrion's got a great relationship with with his niece and nephew. I didn't know that, huh?
I have to say there was some added scenes that I thought did absolutely nothing. In fact, that were not in the book, and I can't
figure out why.
Yeah, there is a scene where Jaime Lannister in the second episode comes down and talks to Jon Snow and is just a dick for no reason. He's like, so you just swung that sword? I'm just going to be a real dick right now. I don't know you, but I'm just a big dick. And then walks off. And I was like, what is that about? Like,
well, no, he called him on – he mentioned him being a bastard.
No, he was a dick about the whole thing.
Yeah, but he mentioned him being bastard, which basically set him into a foul mood. And then Tyrion comes along and it's supposed to be like, oh, here's the other Lannister. Another Lannister.
I guess. One of the great things that they didn't do in the book that I remember, they may have, but when Peter Dinklage, when Tyrion is talking to Jon Snow when they're heading up to the wall,
yeah.
and they're at the campfire, and Peter Dinklage says, what are you doing in a way? And he says, well, I'm going to join this, order. He goes, oh yeah, you're protecting us from all those scary monster things that we knew as kids. You're too smart to know that those things don't exist. You're
right.
Heading up there to just waste your life.
Right.
Because for thousands of years, nothing is,
nothing's
been
happened.
Up there. So he's telling him, this is so absurd.
Yep.
And you're right. When you're kind of read Sword and Sorcery, you just assume that there's going to be orcs there. So yeah, they're up at the top of the wall protecting you from orcs and dragons. Right. But you know,
grumpkins like, and snarks.
Yeah, snarks and grumpkins.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And he was like, "Listen, they don't exist. Where? What are you doing?"
Brilliant.
And I love that.
He actually does say that in the book.
It does. There's a great scene when they're going up to the wall. It's kind of one of their bonding moments where Tyrion Lannister says to Jon Snow, you know, there are things and there are men that prefer to look at the hard truth, essentially. And the hard truth for Jon is that he's going to a place for what he thinks are honor for his honor, but there's not much honor in it, essentially.
Right.
And he really gets what I forgot. And then I went back and checked was that George R. R. Martin really started off as a television writer.
Yeah.
And was a television writer for a very long time and was very good at it. I mean, Beauty and the Beast, which I loved when I was a kid, you know, which made Ron Perlman sexy, which, you know, takes work. and set up his whole prosthetic face wearing career. And then he wrote for Twilight Zone, and he was part of the new Twilight Zone guys, which, you know, which is just fantastic. And he got so fed up by the limitations of those two shows that he went off and wrote Game of Thrones in a snit. Mm-hmm. And you know, now he's coming back to television with it. But it's funny because I'll listen to the dialogue and I'll go, every time I think there's a fantastic line, I was like, oh, that line just summed it all up. I'm like, oh, well, actually, that was kind of in the book. And I wonder whether or not George R. R. Martin was sort of seeing it all in his head back then. I mean, he obviously couldn't, but I mean, it seemed like almost made for TV.
Yeah.
It's probably just me, but when I'm watching the opening of the film, I keep missing George R. R. Martin's name, but I always catch the created by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. And well, it's always like, it feels like they're really emphasizing the hell that they created it. And it just feels like they should always be saying created by, based on, you know?
Well, maybe. Right. But, you know, it takes those two dudes working their ass off to get those books on screen. They, you know, I'm not saying George R. R. Martin doesn't deserve to have, you know, huge billing on this. I'm just saying those dudes are they've got a lot of ahead of them. So
those dudes are lucky to be adapting this series. That's all I got to say. I mean, it's the most popular.
Yeah, but you know what? I have to say, I think George R. R. Martin is lucky to have them do such a great job.
I'll say that too.
Now, speaking of the open, what do you guys think about the open? Because
I think the open is fantastic.
Okay, here's the thing. I think it looks beautiful. I don't think it fits the show.
I think you're totally wrong.
Where is there any clockwork in that show, in the story? What weird time period are they in that clockwork is relevant?
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
I think it's the cogs of the machine,
It's a game. It's the cogs of a game.
I did not. Oh, it's a game board?
Yeah.
That's what I thought it was, yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting
to me, I'm seeing a forging of some type of ring or sword and then some type of clockwork. I didn't see a game at all. Huh. Okay. Well, maybe. It looks beautiful. I mean, you know.
I love it. I
think it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it is gorgeous. Stunning. I was just like, wow, I just feel like it should be on another movie or something.
Nah.
But even on a less literal level, I think that, you know, all those gears, I mean, basically it's machinations. You know what I mean? I don't know. It seems to fit to me on a less literal level.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you guys will convince me.
On a visual level, though, it doesn't look like the rest of the series.
Well, I like it because what you're seeing is, and I think they're actually going to play with this, is you're seeing individual places emerge.
No, I like that part.
And I wonder whether or not they're going to show different cities emerging out of this map. And it very quickly says, this is the way this map looks.
Yeah.
You know, this is where the north is, this is where the wall is, this is the places that, and I think it's a very quick way of going, look, you get it? And it actually is doing a job that otherwise they would have to spend doing exposition in the show.
I agree. They do a great job of showing.
They did a good job of showing the map.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think of the wall, speaking of?
I think the wall is stunning.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I have to say, when I read the books, I didn't feel like I wanted when he kept saying how high the wall was. I thought the first time it was a misprint. They added a zero to it, and so I shrunk the wall in my mind because I was like, "That's silly! You don't build a wall that high to keep anything out."
It's the first men in magic, Aaron.
Yeah, I know, but I still I shaved off a zero.
Aaron just had a small igloo.
I had like a wall, like a big giant stoned ice wall.
I imagined the scope of that wall, just how large it was until I saw the series.
So you and Aaron thought it was the ice hotel?
I didn't think it was the ice hotel. I thought it was a large wall, but I didn't think it was quite that large.
Snoopy and Charlie Brown hiding behind it and like falling out. You're going like, you guys come out.
I think a 5-story wall is appropriate to keep out pretty much anybody. You don't need a 150-story wall.
I don't know. If the others were real, I think 150 stories.
Now we might as well. It's we're half an hour in. We might as well just break it and go.
Wait, before you break there, though, I do have a problem with Catelyn Stark, and I don't know if any of you have the same problem. But I thought she'd be
prettier, but that's the only thing.
She's been great, but
I have a problem. I feel like they added a scene where she breaks down when he's leaving, and in the book, she actually tells him he needs to leave. It's his duty.
You're right entirely. In fact, some people were upset online about that. I am way more convinced about the TV show's version of how she views that than the books. Like, to me, I go, she would be totally, totally upset if essentially half her family is never going to come back. I mean, back in the day,
but you don't have to come out and say it. She could have done that. She could have come out, and rather than go, "Here, I'm a weak woman," breakdown. She could have said, with tears in her eyes, or absolutely restraining her jaw, with a one parenthetical in the script, resisting this moment, whatever it is.
But why is that being
it's
a
your
weak
duty?
Woman?
Go.
Just not being a weak woman. She's saying, "Listen, I don't want you going off." For another career for the dumbest thing ever, to get yourself killed, to babysit these people.
This goes totally against how she is in the book.
But she's a little whiny.
She's got some tough stuff in the book.
What point does it serve to have her do that?
Because it's more relatable. It makes sense to me.
Well, actually, while we're on the subject of relatable, I think they also added a scene with Cersei Lannister, that scene where they're talking over Bran about the baby.
Yeah.
Yes, they did add that.
Which is weird. It was weird, but I think it's, again, to humanize Cersei, and I think it's
red herring. Okay, we've broken it officially. I mean,
I think there was a different reason for it.
Oh, really?
Because that scene, she's talking about her first child, which had dark hair.
Right.
That's going to play in later.
Okay, we got to stop. Okay, so now we're now, it's impossible for us to move on, it sounds like, without spoiling things. So,
okay.
Paris, you have to leave.
All right, I have not read the rest of the book, so I am going to exit now.
Okay. Goodbye. Anybody else?
Bye, Paris.
Go with Paris.
She's taking her second book right now.
I'm taking my second book with me.
Oh, wait till you get to the third.
I know, right? But before we get into the black hair question, I just think that whole scene was fabricated. I mean, and it was fabricated to make it's horrifying, but it's also trying to humanize Cersei at the same time, which I kind of dislike.
That's why I thought it was a red herring. You can humanize the woman without having to throw the red herring of like her. Don't you like the Lannisters a little bit? Don't you like them? Because what it's going to do is later on it's going to throw into question whether or not she's actually betraying Sansa and whether or not she's playing Sansa until we realize, at the very end of the first season, we're going to go, Cersei's a raw, nasty bitch. I get it.
All right, our listeners, we all know that we have crossed the line. Leave now if you do not want to.
Third warning.
Yeah, third warning. We're now into the books, and we'll be going off into the fourth book. Okay, So, all right. So how do we feel about these? The reason why I brought up Jaime Lannister, having a problem with him a little bit, is we all know that Jaime Lannister, he actually has some really heavy lifting to do here.
Yeah, but not – he won't have to do that until season four.
Well, no.
He really won't.
Really?
Yeah, will not have to do any. He will not have to do it until he becomes the character that he comes, where he gets his hand cut off and everything like that, which is book four.
Oh, that's not in three?
I think it's four.
Well, hopefully four. They won't be canceled by then. But you know, seriously,
no, they will not.
He has to do some work as an actor, and I was getting a little nervous. I was like, you know, his character is great because I hated his guts.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, you know, what they do is they kind of make you have to think in the fourth book.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, I think the actor is going to have to pull that shit off.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think he's got four seasons to figure it out.
This guy is a Danish actor, actually. You guys know that, right?
And you could hear his accent slipping every now and again.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
it's. I think he's doing his job. I think he's doing his job. The guy who I'm actually interested in is the Hound, and we'll see how that actor ends up pulling it off.
Yeah.
So what? Like, we can talk about it now. That we're in spoiler land. What does everybody think about the little loop that they did with Daenerys and Drogo?
Drogo. You know, they're approaching him very differently in the books. He was kinder and kind of gentler at the beginning,
right?
But he
said no more in the books. They just talk about his eyes and the way he looks at her and stuff like that. But he didn't say any more than he does now.
No, but he in the first episode, he takes her and she's crying through the whole thing. And there's
in the TV show.
Yeah, in the TV show. In the books, you feel like he helps her through the.
He
beginning
does.
Of the marriage.
He's,
yeah.
He's kind to her. He's kind to her that first time. But then, after that, he takes her like a horse.
True.
Mm-hmm. He switches.
Well, I think what they did was, I think they set her up for the second episode to be more assertive. And so that we start seeing a change from the girl who's like, you know, being handed over to someone who could become somebody who can, you know, is a leader.
I thought that was a complete screw up. Because one, he becomes her sun and stars. She says this over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, but we'll see if that happens.
She falls in love with him, right? She falls in love with him after this first time, after being terrified. I mean, why set up, I don't want to go with him, I don't want to go with him, I don't want to go with him, if he's not the person who's going to turn her from a scared little girl to being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes out of love for him and says, look, he doesn't understand me and I need to get him to understand me. And so she, through her handmaids, learns how to control him like a horse in a certain way. And that's what one of the things that her handmaids say. In this, effectively, she's learning this to keep herself from getting raped. And that bugged me because it's not making her active. It's making her a victim.
Yeah, but you don't think at the end it looked like to me she was enjoying it at the end of that.
Yeah, but they could have done it the same way without, you know, and shown no more sex or no less sex and had her go in stronger and I think have a better arc than avoiding getting raped.
Right.
You know, because we're going to name her dragon after him and we're going to do all these other things.
Yeah.
One of them's I'm going to name it after my raper. Come on.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see how they can fix that, if we can learn to understand why she falls in love with him.
I hope so.
I think he's a less fun character than he was in the book. And I think their relationship is much less nuanced. Now, you know, look, they're trying to get this. Here's the thing. I think they're doing overall a pretty good job of what they're doing.
Yes.
I think they got a lot to handle, and I think that we're tracking who all the characters are, we're tracking the world, and the people who are really important we like, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, the series does feel a little bit simpler and a little bit more direct than it did in the books.
Did you have the same, because in the books, like, he would hit these, like the end of the first episode where Bran falls, is pushed out the window. in the when I read that first in the book, I was like, oh, what? I mean, I was literally like thrown by the fact that the author just did that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I already know that it happens, but in the TV show, I felt like it didn't surprise me. I didn't feel like they had built it up enough that it really surprised me.
Well, because we hadn't spent enough time
with Bran,
that character. So because they had kind of essentialized him, you know, we hadn't fallen in love with him. And that's the difference. In the books, you fell in love with that kid, and then it happened.
What do you think, Anthony?
It's kind of interesting. I mean, honestly, one of the things, and I'm going to say it again, I think they're doing a really great job, but one of the things that I've been kind of just turning over in my mind is that they have a lot to put into those one-hour segments, and they're moving really quickly. I mean, and it's good on the one hand because they're doing a great job of giving information and not being like didactic and boring about it, like lecturing the audience about all this wealth of detail that comes to you in the books, the way they're written. But at the same time, by doing that, I think you're right. I mean, I think that you don't have that wealth of information to have the connections to the characters that you do, particularly Bran, when, you know, that huge moment in the book where he gets thrown out the window. I mean, or, you know, even Daenerys. I mean, because that scene, the scene with Drogo doesn't happen until well into the book. I mean, and there's a number of chapters already that have kind of set up a lot of the details of that world and, you know, their relationship. I will also say, I think, honestly, that's just a really tough scene, the Daenerys and Drogo scene.
Hold on a second, guys. I'm hearing someone sharpening a knife in the background.
It's Matt.
That's me.
Okay. Sorry, go on.
Sorry. It's my wife sharpening.
Caring for Matt.
So sorry. I that was not a good spot for me to, you know, to pick off. But if you could continue.
I'm just gonna. My only point is this. I mean, honestly, it's a really tough scene to put on screen because Daenerys is a young girl who's been sold off to a warlord, essentially, as a bargaining chip for somebody for her brother's crown. And yes, in the book there's a relationship, but it's a tough one. I think books inherently give you more space to imagine in between and make it something else. Whereas when you see stuff on screen, it's a concrete image. I mean, and I think that's a really tough scene to deliver and not have it be a little problematic.
And, it's hard. You know, I thought it was a shame that you couldn't even get to know the dogs more so that when Lady was killed,
The
dire wolves. I mean,
that could have been such a simple thing that they had done. Because they even have a thing where Caitlin is like, will they stop howling? You know? But, I mean, all you needed to see was Summer get on the bed a couple of times when Bran is there and she's like, get off. All you needed to see was her get off.
I know, but you know those scenes weren't. I mean, they didn't even spend time with her. So, you know, that would just be another scene. I mean, at least they put the scene of Bran being protected by his dog before that.
Yeah.
Because that to me felt like all the kids had a protector.
Yeah.
And so they at least got to slip that one in beforehand.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I just went back and revisited the first book because I was thinking about some of the stuff we were talking about with Sansa.
How I think people shouldn't hate her.
Yeah, and I still hate and honor.
You guys are little bitches.
Wait, no.
Not at all, because your whole thesis,
wait a second, what's your thesis, Aaron? That she's a fairy tale princess in a world that's
harsh world.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, the way you phrased it to me was that she was a Disney heroine in a medieval world. And I think realistically speaking, she lacks the one thing that the Disney heroines always have, which is honesty.
No. First of all, she's only dishonest that one time.
No, it's not that. That's
no,
not
it's
true.
Not that one time.
Well, the other time, all I know is that she's over trusting.
No, Aaron, you're a very nice man.
No, actually, I think, listen, Aaron, Aaron actually makes a point that's made in the book. I mean, you know, someone, I think it's her father, says to her that, you know, she is the person who sees, you know, and expects the best out of people.
And she does her father.
Right.
Her father gets it because he expects everybody else to be as noble as he is, and he gets his ass kicked because of it.
No, I would say that her father has a lot more honesty, and he has a lot more honesty with himself about what he sees in front of him than Sansa does.
Right. Sansa is definitely, I think, you know, it's very clear that she's punished for her dishonesty there. And
But Sansa also wants things the way she wants them, and
she's willing to make believe that things around her are the way they are not what they
are.
That's
true. Yes. That's true. Yes. That's true. But where else in the book is she kind of immorally lie?
She sells out her dad.
No, that she trusts the queen to help her dad. She does not lie about that. She does not turn over – she does not consciously turning her family over because she doesn't know what we know as readers.
Right, but she –
she goes to the queen and says, please help my dad. And the queen goes, oh, really? How am I going to help your dad? And
she sees around her – and I will actually go back and look for instances of this if you need me to. But she sees around her Jeffrey and the queen do things that if she was willing to be honest with herself –
right.
Prove them untrustworthy, and she refuses to see them
as they are. Totally
Aaron, Aaron,
I totally
agree.
Aaron,
they killed her dog.
I
her
totally
wolf.
Agree.
They made her wolf die.
I understand
and
that.
And yet she still goes to them.
I understand that, but it's very easy for us to say, oh, yeah, well, you killed your dog, so you have to hate the person, you know, your chance
okay,
of becoming
I'm gonna
a
go
queen.
Kill your dog, and then you're going to go ask me for some help?
I'm going to tell you right now, if someone killed my pet, I would not be trusting them. In fact,
I'm not lying.
I think it would be if they do the TV show correctly, if I were doing it, I would make Sansa a little bit more complex instead of having everybody just hate her.
Well, first of all, you got to say her name right. Her name is not Sanskrit.
Sansa.
It's Sansa or Sansa. S-A-N-S-A. There's no R at the end.
Okay. Sounds.
Unless
Sansa.
You're from
Sansa.
New Hampshire.
Unless you're from New Hampshire. Sansa.
Sansa. Sansa.
No
okay,
R.
Sansa.
There we are.
I think that I think it's easy to hate her for those things. But I think I
don't hate her by the force.
I don't hate her either.
I think if you like her the whole time, then you're belying the whole writer's point of
no.
I felt
sorry for her is what I did. I was like, oh my god, I just feel sorry for this.
I think. I think she's meant to be spoiled. I think she's meant to be entitled. Yeah. I think she's meant to be someone who so desperately wants to be a princess and a queen that she sells out her sister.
Yeah.
And that she lives in a certain amount of denial, you know, that she embraces in order to try and get this dream. And that's all ripped from her, which is great because it gives her some place to go that's fantastic.
Right.
You know,
she's got a good growth curve.
Yeah.
She's fantastic.
She has the growth beaten into her.
I can't wait to see what they do with her. You know, in the next books that come out. So,
So question for you guys: the wolves. Now, each of the children has a wolf, and obviously, Lady gets killed, so Sansa's the only one without a wolf. I mean, as the books go on, those wolves seem to take on a lot more kind of what's the word? I'm not mythological, but they take on totems.
They're totems.
Exactly. And the fact that Sansa is the only one without one.
Well, we don't know what happened to Arya. Arya's.
Well,
yes, we do.
Well, we've heard grumblings of it, but there's...
No, we know that Nymeria is leading a gigantic pack of wolves in the Westwoods.
True.
We know this
for a fact. Yeah, you're right. Well, no,
we know that's where Nymeria is.
Okay.
It's mentioned at least 20 times throughout the books that there is a gigantic she-bitch of a wolf.
Right.
Who takes people's throws out, and she leads a pack of wolves.
Right.
It's just done over.
Well, I have heard the creators say that they are trying to figure out how to make dire wolves.
Dire wolves?
Dire
like
wolves.
Huge.
Yeah, in the next season. They said we have to figure that part out.
Yeah, right, I have to say that's a casting issue. I'm glad I don't have to sort out because
seriously.
Casting wolves in the first place is disastrous. But then to actually have to figure out dire wolves is.
I think they're going to be digital.
Probably.
I mean, did you see how big the dead one was? I mean,
yeah, which is fantastic. It's as big as a horse, right?
Yeah,
it was huge.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fantastic thing is that I mean, eventually, book three, we've got to show. I mean, and you're going to understand why you need a wall that big. Is they're going to show giants and they're going to show people riding mammoths and things that make. You're going to show Grumpkins and Snarks. So
Grumpkins and Snarks everywhere you look.
Yeah, it's going to be Grumpkins and Snarks.
Well, maybe we should we should be winding this down, but the second season was already greenlit.
Yep.
But what do we really – how do we feel about seeing the end of this series on HBO?
Are we talking about Ned?
No, I'm talking about do we think this thing is going to survive before they cancel it?
I think it will.
Well, I just think the thing's going to outrun George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, that I do. I agree, Matt.
Well, I think who knows? We interviewed George R. R. Martin. He said that he writes when he needs the money. Well, he also may write when he has a contract because I have a feeling that HBO did not sign up a series and have it just stop dead in the wall without some type of agreement.
That's why I think they're going to outrun him. They're gonna get him. They're gonna run him into the ground because he's finishing up the second half of four, and they're supposed to be seven. So
did
if you
he
think
say
he's
seven?
Gonna
yeah.
So if you think he's gonna finish up three more books before they get to, you're out of your mind.
Yeah,
there's no way.
Well, how long did it take him to write the second book?
How long did it take him to write the second book? Was about 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
So he could...
Third book was like 2 years past that, and this one has been almost a decade.
Yeah. Super long.
Well...
Yeah, and that's the second half of four.
So he would... So we would... He has 5 years to write...
Three books.
No, he has 5 years to write... Well, 6 years to write two more books. If you give... That last season to the book,
yeah,
yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe, hopefully, he won't write too fast where it ends up just he isn't pulling a Lost as he puts it.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry, Matt. I was wondering if anybody saw what they got a really great audience share, not only on the first broadcast of the pilot episode, but on the second rebroadcast of it. Do we know how the second episode did?
No drop in numbers at all.
Wow, fantastic.
No drop in numbers at all.
I think there's going to be interest in it. I mean, even if you haven't read the books, obviously there are people like myself who have and obsessed about the details. Essentially, they've done a great job of introducing the world to a lot of people who haven't read the books. And I mean, obviously, the only thing I worry about is the Lost phenomenon, because if you're someone who's been told by your friends that there's this great show that you need to see and you come in at episode four, I think you're going to be confused.
Well, the fantastic thing is that if they're like, I want more, you can always go to the books and you'll find a wealth of information that is awesome. You know, so if you're like, I don't think nobody's going to get disappointed with this show. Until at least season four. You know? If they're doing a book
when
a year.
Making shit up.
Well, you know what? I was told, one of the showrunners said that they are even considering breaking up some of the long books, like season two, or the second book, into two seasons.
Well, I mean, okay. So here we go. Game of Thrones was released in 96. Okay. Clash of Kings, second book, was released in 98.
Okay, so, 2 years, not bad.
2 years, not bad, right? Which means, he had a lot of it and he kept on going. Storm of Swords, 2000, right? And Storm of Swords was literally, he went from 807 pages in the first one to 1,128 pages by the third.
Right.
Right?
So he was doing those in 2 years.
He was doing those in 2 years. 5 years between three and four.
Right.
All right? And then 6 years between four and five.
Right. So he could do 2 or 3 years per book, and then we would be okay.
If he went back to that schedule, yes.
If he went back to that schedule.
If he knew. But there was one thing. If you go to his blog, he has a great website and a great blog. His blog, he says, he's so messed up now because everybody is everywhere. And he's like, this guy's on a sea journey, and this sea journey takes this long. And this guy's going this way, and this takes this long. And everybody's got to show up at the same time. And his, like, he's like, just moving people around the board is crazy at this point.
We also said he's going to thin the herd, right?
Probably.
Yeah, good. I have to say, just having gone back to the first book again, I mean, and this is book one, I mean, and book three and four sort of exponentially grow the number of people that you're following storylines of.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But even book one, I was looking at it and thinking, like, what an epic undertaking it was
to be
able to not only create this world, but these complex family histories and backstory for every family, and they're interrelated to one another. It's kind of
mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling to begin with.
Well,
so,
he said he was a gardener, not an architect. So, I mean, he describes two different ways that he thinks of people writing stories. He thinks Tolkien's an architect. Tolkien had the whole world in the Silmarillion created, the language, everything in place, and then he started writing. He said he's a gardener. He just happens to plant a seed when he needs that seed. So his writing of the stories and the families and all of that backstory is just shit he makes up on the day. This is the problem that I think he's getting now into books 5, 6, and 7, is now he's got to live up to it because he's created this garden.
Well, it's continuity issue.
And it's growing like crazy, and now he's like, where did I put the what? You know?
Yeah.
And now he's got to go to the readers and go, okay.
Who's this knight?
Remember that guy from him? I need a...
He needs those kids from Galaxy Quest who know everything.
In his blog, he talks about that. He talks about the guy who managed his website, and he took this guy just had a fanfic website of Martin. And actually, I ended up talking to him to get our interview with Martin back in the day. But he's so knowledgeable of George R. R. Martin that George R. R. Martin now goes to this kid and is writing a book with this kid about the world of Fire and Ice.
Yeah, he needs to just write the effing novels.
Yeah.
Stop with this shit.
This is the problem. There are actually people who love the book so much that now they're griefers on George R. R. Martin all day long.
Blogging.
They hate him. He built an extension on his house. And people like why the fuck aren't you, why are you building an extension on your house, man?
Shouldn't you be writing?
Like, people were literally like trying to figure out how many hours he was working on the books instead of doing shit that he should have been doing. It's crazy.
We should wrap this up. Our short episode has turned long. So
okay.
All right. Well, I'm
last
glad
thoughts?
we should talk about this at the end of the season.
Okay.
We'll do another.
Like, favorite character for a sign off.
Okay. Just last thing. Okay. When does Drogo die? What episode? Because we have 10 episodes for this.
I think it's 4. I think it's soon.
Episode 4. You think he's gonna die?
I think it's soon because they're moving super fast.
Yeah.
That's too soon. You're right.
I think they went to 10. I think 6. I think
six.
I think Drogo and
six.
Ned.
Bets on will, six. Bets
and
on
I
six.
Think Ned will die close to that too.
I think Ned's going out in 8 or 9.
I think Ned's at the end because I think particularly it's going to be, for those people who haven't read the books, it's going to be a big shock. And if that's not climax season in some way, you know.
You killed your main character and the guy on every poster?
Exactly.
What? Yeah, that's going to be great. That is totally going to be great.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, thanks everybody for joining me. We're going to do more of these Skype versions. Go watch
little
movies.
Mini geeks.
Yes.
Mini geeks.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have
thanks,
a good geek
guys.
Week.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.